the 1981 trading year with a bang. The Dow gained 8.79. The gainers outnumbered the losers 2-1 on the big board. And the volume was light, 28,870,000 shares. There's been some grumbling among the dignitaries invited to Ronald Reagan's inaugural about the formal attire Mr. Reagan will be wearing and has advised them to wear, too. But President Carter's spokesman says his boss will wear whatever the president-elect wants him to. But Jody Powell says he doubts whether Mr. Carter will pay as much for his morning coat and striped pants as Ronald Reagan will. Mr. Reagan's entire outfit has reportedly set him back $1,500. It's 4:30 past the hour. When the Polar Bear Club of Vancouver, British Columbia holds its annual swim, it really gets a turnout. More than 1,800 of the faithful gathered on the shores of English Bay, and to the spirited accompaniment of a brass band, many plunged into the 8-degree water, swam 100 yards and back. A fellow from New Zealand, Brendan Horam, took first place. While on shore, his brother stole his clothes. Practical joke. Polar bears who've been doing this for a while say the big turnout was due to the balmy 10-degree temperatures. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Bob Schmidt.
Listen to Northampton. Listen with your heart. Make a happy song. Sing along, do your part. We're Pioneer Valley, 1400 WHMP. Listen to Northampton, where your world belongs. Listen to your day, to your life, to your songs. With Pioneer Valley, 1400 WHMP. Listen to Northampton.
Okay, we're back here with Ned Martin. Ned, you there?
Yes,
okay, attaboy. I thought you were sitting there. You know, you were talking here before we broke off the air like you were filling time delay someplace out in Detroit or with St. Louis or whatever.
I wish it were.
Yeah, I know.
I wish it were July.
Yeah.
January.
Season isn't that far away. Spring training starts in, what, about, let's see, 4, 8, 10.
February.
So looking forward to looking forward to the year, huh?
Darn right.
Yeah, you had a good trade there, I thought. A lot of our listeners would like to know what you as a broadcaster have as an overview of the particular trade that was made.
I liked it. I one person I did not want to get rid of is Rick Burleson.
Yeah, the rooster, yeah.
He was the guts of the team, and if you can get people like you got for him, and you're not going to have him at the end of the year anyway, and you weren't winning, so let's try something. And I think Carney Lansford is a fine ball player. He's 23 years old, and now that he's gotten here, everybody starts to dig in. Reporters start to say, well, he's blind, he can't see, he's an eye problem. Well, don't worry about Carney Lansford. He can play. He can play third. He can hit the wall. He can throw. He's going to drive in runs, and he'll be valuable as an extra base hit man, I think, and not—he's not a big homer hitter, but he's going to hit doubles and triples and things like that.
Well, don't you think he'll hit better long ball wise in that ballpark than what he did in California, though?
Oh, sure, yeah. And he'll hit better as a long ball hitter. He's more of a long ball type than Burleson. Of course, Burleson was a scrappy all purpose ball player who you cannot replace at shortstop. The whole key of the thing is Glenn Hoffman.
That's
going
right.
Over there.
Yeah.
Glenn Hoffman had been a shortstop in youth league and high school and everything else until he got into the high minors. He was the shortstop on the All-Star team in 1979 with Pawtucket.
So, I didn't know that.
You know, he played more games at third, but they made him a shortstop anyway. But he is not unfamiliar. He's not going to be the dig-em-out kind of person. He doesn't have the arm that Burleson has, but let him see. Well, let's see what happens. The position is not entirely unfamiliar to him, and he's built like a shortstop. He is still growing. He's got some range in a
good arm, I understand.
Funny kind of way.
Yeah.
You got Mark Clear, who's going to be a fine relief pitcher. He's hurt us a lot of times.
Yeah, but the thing about Mark Clear is, speculation-wise, in Western Massachusetts at any rate, I don't know what the speculation is in the Boston market area, that what with Clear being in the bullpen, that does indeed free Stanley for either a starting role or whatever.
Well, yeah, I don't know what Ralph Houck has in mind. I personally would like to see Stanley stay right where he is in the bullpen. I think he's much more valuable there. He's a flip-flop kind of guy that has emotions that the starting role, which he can perform, but it bothers him. He gets psyched up and very nervous before a start. He's the kind of guy where every day you put him out there, he's big, he's strong, and just move him in there. You don't tell him when he's coming in. All of a sudden he's in there, and he starts throwing that nasty sinker and gets ground balls. And I would like to see him and Clear out there. I don't care whether it's Campbell, Bergmeier, anybody else. I think those two could anchor what could be just a tremendous bullpen. Now, if you have to put Stanley as a starter, you have to do it because you've got to get another one. And I'm hoping that they trade for one somewhere along the line before opening day and maybe during the interleague
league
training.
Yeah.
Thinking that maybe the Fred Lynn thing would resurface. I don't know. I don't give much credence to all that's going on lately about Lynn. But I think you've got to have Stanley in the bullpen. If you don't have any other starter, then you've got to put him as a starter and then wear Mark Clear out.
Yeah. Is it a fair assessment, like has been speculated, that Stanley gets better as the game goes on because as he gets a bit more tired, as is true with a sinker ball pitcher, that a sinker ball sinks better when he gets tired? Would that be an apropos statement?
Possibly, yeah. He has shown it on occasions, but there have been occasions also when he just has been nothing, you know. And he's good. He's a good competitor. And what you got to do is have a catcher keep on top of him all the time. And the thing is that as a starting pitcher, you shouldn't have to have that. You shouldn't have to have Carlton Fisk guide him through every pitch because he's a major league pitcher now. Coming into the bullpen, he's just using his raw stuff plus the funny little pitch that he acquired, a spitter. along with his natural...
That's illegal. You know that.
Well, it doesn't make any difference whether it is or not. Nobody bothers with it anymore. Everybody throws it, it seems. And,
yes.
And nobody cares. It's supposed to be out the ball, but why not just legalize it?
Yeah, I agree with you, Ned. I agree with you. How about...
He has a good one, and I think that he maybe has one of the best ones in the league, along with Mike Norris of the Oakland A's.
Well, now, how about intra-league-wise, there have been some trades over the course of the season since the season ended, and Milwaukee apparently has strengthened themselves, at least in my view. I've said that publicly on the air, as a matter of fact, that I thought Milwaukee made, quote-unquote, a hell of a trade, if you'll excuse my French.
They did. They've got a wagon going there.
Oh, hey. That's
offensively.
That's a ball club. Whew.
I mean, if you add somebody like Ted Simmons into your lineup.
Yeah.
Which is already a lethal lineup, and all the other people that they have, they've got eight people that just bounce you around. But then they still have to have the pitching.
Well, they got Vukovic, as you know, from Cincinnati.
Well, who knows what he can do?
That's right. But they did get a catcher, which was it Bucky Martinez here last year? Ned, you know better than I.
Well, they got him back. I mean, Kansas City got him, wanted him back. They've had Martinez. But Daryl Porter left him, but now they got Ted Simmons.
Yeah.
And Simmons wants to catch. He didn't want all this thing that Whitey Herzog and the Cardinals wanted him to play first when Daryl Porter came over there. They had a mess of catchers there.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Ted Simmons is not yet to the point where Johnny Bench says, I only want to catch 2 days a week. Simmons wants to catch all the time. And Ted Simmons, I think, is one of the most valuable people in this game.
Why so?
Because he's a switch hitter, he's a 300 hitter, he knocks in runs, and he's a good catcher.
Okay. Now, they added Vukovic, who we both know is in sort of an unknown commodity in the American League. Sometimes pitchers that go from one league to another have their problems, and sometimes they become great pitchers.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I think he can throw. He's a good thrower. He can throw hard.
And they lost Castro. Who did not? In fact, I saw that in a paper today or yesterday that Castro goes, so to speak. They did not care to re-sign him. Their weakness has been in the bullpen, and apparently.
Yeah, and they also lost in a trade Sorensen.
Yeah, unless Cano, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've often said.
But I think they're a factor. I think because of the power that they have, and because their ability to score runs, are going to be a tough and a very interesting and a very I would think a great team to watch.
Yeah, interesting baseball team.
Yeah.
Okay, now listen, I'll tell you what, we got to take another break here, and I'll be right back with you, okay?
Right.
All right. Now, how many of you remember back to 1947? The Yankees beat the Dodgers in the World Series. Jet Pilot won the Kentucky Derby. The post-war construction boom was in full swing. That also was the year that Calderwood Rubbish Removal started in business locally. Yes, Calderwood picked up the refuse from, as a matter of fact, the house that I lived in Northampton at that time for a quarter, 25 cents, one-fourth of a dollar per week with a dump truck. They have come a long way since then. From a single dump truck, they've grown to a firm which has 27 full-time employees, all local people, and the largest fleet of collection vehicles in western Massachusetts, Calderwood. Well, I've just begun to scratch the surface about Calderwood. Calderwood, even that name has a ring to it. Calderwood, with the first enterprise, compactorized service in the area. And you know anybody that's been providing the same outstanding service to you for 33 years, double digits for your home or for your business, has certainly earned a five-star rating. Calderwood, 584-2250, 584-2250. Jot that down, won't you? Their customers are indeed their best salespeople. Now, there are a number of you who no doubt remember back to 1940, but probably many more that do not. It was the era of big bands, radio shows, great movies. Also the year Center Millwork was born. Center Millwork, Service Center Road, right next to the Western Massachusetts bus lines. Now, the name Center Millwork does not perhaps tell you an awful lot about how complete a service that they do offer indeed. First of all, Center Millwork specializes in absolutely beautiful kitchen cabinets, custom made. That's what they're noted for. But that's only the beginning. Center Millwork does a total job of kitchen and bathroom remodeling from beginning to beautiful end. They'll coordinate the electrical and the plumbing work for your kitchen and your bathroom, in addition to the cabinetry. They've been doing it for 40 years. That also alone has to tell you the deal. Reputation for excellence, 4 decades of experience. Hey, not a bad double play combination. Or how about planning to designing to completion? That's better than tinkers to evers to chance. Center Millwork. Service Center Road, next to the bus lines, 584-1224, 584-1224. Okay, Ned, now we're back. Are you there, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We got about, maybe 15 minutes left to go, and I want to talk about the Jimmy Fund here for a couple of minutes, Ned. Ken Coleman has been involved with the Jimmy Fund over a long period of time. He did a most capable job of anchoring the radiothon last year, done on a Saturday all day, which it will be done again this year all day. And we are simulcasting, as we are tonight, as a matter of fact. You do have an enormous number of fans and listeners in Western Massachusetts, Ned. I'm sure it's a pleasure for them to hear you off the cuff, so to speak, outside of a baseball game, which you almost did when you were doing that lineup for 1967, the Red Sox baseball team. But it's nice of them, or nice for them, to have an opportunity to hear you in the off-season, so to speak, in conjunction with what I consider probably the finest charity that there is.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of it.
Well, now, you're going to be here, hopefully, on the 23rd. I'm sure you have plans accordingly. We have a dinner planned on the 23rd of the month, which is at the Northampton Hilton Hotel. And there are guests which are keyed to the 1967 Impossible Dream Team. I really don't care to divulge who all the guests will be, but Rico Petrocelli will be here.
Well, I know one of them. My buddy is going to be here.
Who's that?
Harrelson.
Oh, yeah, the Hawk. Yeah, he's the featured speaker, sure. Right. Yeah, we're going to auction off his hat, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we might get a nickel for that, you know.
Well, you'd be overpriced.
You can tell him I said that. We might get 5 cents for that, you know.
You'd really be cheated then if you have to pay a nickel for that thing.
Yeah. But he is a great guy. He really is. You've worked with him, and perhaps you can give us a little insight on Kenny Harrelson. He was part of that ball club, as you're well aware.
Well, I think you don't need me to tell you what about Ken Harrelson, because he has done it all here anyway. This is he's become his town, really, Boston. And in that year, I do recall when he joined us. It was in New York. We were playing down at Yankee Stadium in '67, and Haywood Sullivan had just gone at the behest of Mr. Yawkey to Ken Harrelson for $75,000 after Harrelson had been released by Charlie Finley.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And the Hawk was there with his cashmere cardigan sweater in the lobby of a hotel in New York and saying hello to everybody. I'd known him, I'd interviewed him before as a player there. And he helped, you know. The latter part of that year, he helped. He hit a home run that helped win a ball game in Yankee Stadium, a right field home run, played in the World Series. But, of course, it wasn't really to happen until next year, the following year, when he just caught fire here. He had his great year here in Boston. He led the league in RBIs. He had the whole town going for him because he had a flair. He still does. He was the first guy to wear sweatbands around here, his wrists. He had the long hair, and he had the medallions and the Nehru suits, and the whole business was going for him at the time when the nation was going for all that.
Okay, now there was another player on that 67 ball club, if I remember correctly, and my memory may fail me here just a bit, but there was a catcher on that baseball team who, unfortunately, and I said really unfortunately, because he was a class guy, went his way, so to speak, within the last couple of months, Ellie Howard. And
yep.
I don't think there's anybody on that ball club who lent what I call, Ned, a touch of class with a capital C to a ball club as much as Ellie Howard did.
Well, he really did help. You know, his statistics were nothing at all. And he joined us he joined our team in August 4th, I remember, out in Anaheim, California, starting a series with the Angels. We all went out to dinner with him that night. He had come from the Yankees. He was not doing much with them. He was in the, you know, he was over the hill a bit in his career. But he added something to this team because he'd been there, you know. He'd been a winner. He knew how to handle pitchers, and he did it with aplomb. He did it beautifully, and he played a little bit in the World Series. Russ Gibson, who had been there started the first game of the World Series that Dick Williams got in trouble about, apparently with Mr. Yawkey, but Williams said, okay, this guy's been with me all year. He is starting game one, and that's what happened.
Would you say that there is a semblance of what I would call presence, for lack of a better word, that Ellie Howard added to a ball club, knowing what it's all about, knowing what you have to do? Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, right. Well, he did that, and we've had people like that. We had the guy 2 years ago named Bob Watson.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Who had, and yet he'd never been with a winner.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that just by his very presence,
he knows how to play.
That's right.
He knew off the field how to comport himself, and he was just so he was as classy a guy as I have seen on this ball club. Really,
now
all these years, he and Ray Culp.
Yeah, Ray Culp.
Yep.
That's interesting, because I don't think our listeners are aware of that. Ray Culp is just a name in Red Sox lore. Can you spell it out just a bit?
He was the best pitcher we had for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he'd win 16, 17 ball games and lose games by 2-1 and have to leave before the designated hitter rule came in, tied in a ball game 1-1, and eventually it'd be lost or something like that. And the way he comported himself with a bad arm and trying what he did, I thought he was one of my favorite players.
Can you sense that, Ned, with a ball player? I'm sure you're close to a ball club. You travel with them after all year long on the road and so forth. You're, I'm sure, close to them at home. Can you sort of get that as a gut-to-gut feeling with a ball you meet or interview or you're around, the type of a ball player that you know is a winner?
Yeah.
You can feel that, can't you?
Yeah, I think you can. You can tell them. You can tell them whether you're doing football or baseball or anything, but I think particularly in baseball, when you do spend a lot of time, a lot of your summers with these people, particularly on the road, and you don't have to marry them. You don't really, you're really not that close with them, but you are able to observe how they handle themselves and how they are off the field, on the field, and just whether they're a winner. And a lot of times we've had a bunch of winners that like Culp, like Watson, have not played on winners.
That just refuse to say no and refuse to lose. I mean, the name of the game is to win.
Burleson is
an
outstanding example.
Yeah.
A snarly little feisty ball player.
Yeah, I sort of detect that you, as you said at the top of the show here, that you really don't like to see Burleson go, but in view of what the portent is of the trade, in view of the help, potentially anyway, that's in the offing for the Red Sox, a trade that perhaps not necessarily had to be made, but should have been made.
No, I think it probably had to be made because they weren't going to play. regardless of what anybody says, he deserves, if other guys, all the shortstops like Templeton and Yount are getting $1,000 a year, why not Rooster? If you have a chance, you're going to do it. I think they all wanted to play here, and Lynn still would like to play here, but you got to go into the pragmatic sense of it and figure out what would you do?
Yeah, the practical sense. Yeah, that's another interesting speculation now. There has been a lot of ink, press, whatever, about the situation for both Lynn and John Mayberry, as a matter of fact, and Burleson, who has now been traded, about their free agency situation. Any comment about that?
I mean,
the situation is such that Marvin Miller has said that if the club does not choose to go into arbitration, which the players have an option to do, that the players can then declare themselves free agents after 10 days.
Just those four, Lynn, Fisk, Burleson,
yeah,
and Mayberry.
Yeah.
Because they were signed under the old agreement in 1976.
Yeah.
And, apparently that's true, but they're working on it now.
Yeah, Haywood Sullivan made a comment today, as I recall, that as far as he's concerned, both Fisk and Lynn have a contract for 1981, and he's totally unaware, as he says, about any option that exists contrarily.
Well, he is not the only one that's unaware of it, because Lynn was unaware of it, so was his agent.
Oh, is that right?
And so was Burleson, and so was everybody. So they may try to make a scapegoat out of the Red Sox. Not just the Red Sox, it's the Toronto people. They didn't know about it, and Mayberry didn't know about it. So it's something that was sneaked in there by Marvin Miller, who has to be the man of the decade in baseball of the departed 70s.
Now, let me ask you this now, Ned, in a very serious moment here, very candidly, and I'll ask you a very candid question, and I would expect, as knowing you the way I know you through the airways, so to speak, a very candid answer. Baseball has seemed to become a game of free agents and attorneys and the Wall Street Journal, so to speak, and so forth, and not, so to speak, what I think the average baseball fan has known it to be over many years. The game has seemed to change where, and nowadays, ball players are more interested in other things besides playing the game. Would that be a fair assessment or not a fair assessment?
No, I think you're right. It's kind of a shame that people don't care much about double plays, strikes as much as they do as how long can we get this guy and how many years before he will go to free agency. I think the owners created this monster, and the monster is still there. And
you say the owners created that.
Because George Steinbrenner is still in New York and Ted Turner is still in Atlanta.
Yeah.
As long as that money is around, they will continue to buy people like Claudel Washington at zillions of dollars when he's not worth that, well then...
Well, now, there's a dispute in that statement, because George Steinbrenner came out last week and said, quote, I'm not paying Dave Winfield any more than I think he's worth, for one good reason. After all, we drew 2,700,000 fans last year.
Shoot,
and it's only, wait a minute now, it's only the way of paying the fans back for what they're indeed paying for, which is a winner.
That's lip service. The Red Sox have drawn over $2 million for three straight years, too.
But why can't they pay a David Winfield $14 million for 10 years?
Because they have a ballpark, and whether they're going to draw, they can't. They've got Dennis Eckersley and Jim Rice up there now. Yastrzemski, of course, is a different matter.
But that's diametrically opposed to the comment that you just made, wherein you just said that the $2 million plus, if they did that and the Yankees did that, what makes the Yankees any better than the Red Sox?
Steinbrenner's money.
Well, by the same...
It's not the New York Yankees' money either. It's not the same idea. They're bringing the same people into the ballpark, the same number of people. Now they bring a lot more because they have a bigger ballpark, sure. They can afford, with his bankroll, to help. Don't kid me about the Yankee fans paying Dave Winfield.
Well, that's what he says.
That's what he says.
Yeah.
George Steinbrenner has a few bucks going.
I gave him a New Year's present, Ned. I gave him a bottle of invisible ink to write on his checkbook, which I'm sure you'll appreciate.
All right.
Yeah. How about the remodeling of the ballpark? Anything there that we can hang our shingle upon, so to speak?
Not yet. No. I don't think so. I don't know, but I would doubt it. There's some infighting going on about whether you want to knock down the wall or you're going to put stands between first and third, which is what Buddy LaRue wanted to do. Apparently, it was not feasible, and it's still going to be the same old delightful, antiquated ballpark that it has always been next year.
Well, you might call it antiquated, Ned, but I'll tell you what, I've said this on the air publicly many times, that I thought that the ballparks to watch Major League Baseball in were indeed Fenway Park because of its contiguous nature, you know, where you can sit down and be very close to the action and Wrigley Field in Chicago. They're the only two really left.
Well, there's Detroit, there's Tiger Stadium, and there's Comiskey Park.
Yeah.
They are made parks that are made for baseball. I'm not knocking Fenway Park, but I'm saying it is antiquated and delightful.
Isn't it, though?
But it needs a few more. If you're going to do, if you're going to whip up a ball club again here, you're going to have more seats, and you so that you don't jack up the prices every year where people cannot afford to go because baseball is still the best sports buy.
Yeah, it is, and indeed it is. In spite of the ticket prices, I've knocked ticket prices in professional sports for a long time because I've said that the day is going to come when the average individual cannot afford to go to a ball game, and it's rapidly becoming the case.
It's too bad.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, though. We've got to wrap this up, Ned. It's been very nice having you with me for an hour. I do appreciate you taking your time. I mean that sincerely.
Well, I got a fire built here. We have 5 inches of snow, and we're supposed to be zero tomorrow. So, how about you guys up there?
Yeah, well, we're in the midst of snow. We had about an inch or two today. Hope to have you up here, of course, on the 23rd, minus the snow. Hope you can drive on up, you know. Nice to see you here. Our fans are going to get a baseball, hopefully for you to autograph, and they would love that.
Fine.
Because they're great fans of yours, and they really are. This is a marvelous part of the country for baseball fans, and they do appreciate your delivery and your coverage of the Boston Red Sox, and it's a real pleasure to have you on the air, sir.
Thanks very much, Peter.
Okay, Ned, take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Okay, now, I'll tell you what. The destruction of fire is not only reserved for single-family dwellings. Fire can strike anything. That includes multifamily apartment houses, clothes, and furniture in your apartment may indeed represent a bigger investment than you realize. It only makes sense to protect them with ample fire insurance. Visit Lyons Insurance and ask them about the renter's package policy. Tom and Charlie Lyons have seen hundreds of people very surprised at the low cost of that policy. They'd like to tell you about that in detail. Remember, protecting your personal possessions is a sound investment. You can call at 584-1998 and ask about the renter's package policy at the Francis P. Lyons Insurance Agency on King Street in Northampton. It's the sure way of protecting your clothes and furniture against loss by fire. Now, let me ask you a few most important questions. First, would painstaking craftsmanship and a meaningful guarantee interest you? Well, they should. Next, do reputation, excellence, and length of time identified with an area give you the impression of reliability? Well, that should certainly be true. Finally, concerning the people with whom you are in contact as representatives of the firm, do they convey to you a feeling of confidence? Now, put all those factors together, and you're going to be talking about Dorsey Memorials of Amherst. Dorsey Memorials, 699 Main Street, since 1923. That's a long time. Almost 60 years, as a matter of fact. Dorsey Memorials, the authorized dealer for Rock of Ages, beautiful granite and marble memorials of unequivocal quality. Dark Barry, Royal Purple Mahogany, Canada Gen Pink, many, many others. Northampton's Steady Eddie Sheehy, been identified with Dorsey Memorials for a long time. He, Tommy Dorsey, and Jimmy Welch, Eddie Sheehy I'm talking about, are the people who represent Dorsey Memorials. And most importantly, can be relied upon to get you surely the finest value in what you're paying for. And above all, that you're making a wise purchase. Dorsey Memorials at 699 Main Street in Amherst. They are your authorized Rock of Ages dealer at 253-5212. 253-5212. And that, my friends, will do it for Line for tonight. It's been very nice having you along. If you did indeed listen, I hope you enjoyed that visit with Ned Martin, one of the video voices of the Boston Red Sox, who will indeed be part and parcel of the Jimmy Fund Dinner. And the next day, the Jimmy-thon Radiothon, the 24th of January, a Saturday all day long, anchored by Ken Coleman, the radio voice of the Boston Red Sox. And as a consequence, since I've extended my time 3 minutes beyond what I should, so long, everybody. Take care, and you have yourselves a very pleasant night.